I hope everybody had a good lunch. I get the best session, the one after lunch. Brain is busy digesting the food, and you have to digest something like agile development. So, let's start off with a question. How many people here already developing, using... You don't know what the question is yet. using some form of methodology. Any methodology, even a home-invented methodology. When you're developing software, you have some form of application lifecycle management. You do some kind of specs, you build something, you ship it, you test it. There has to be a process or a method, as they say, to the madness of developing software. How many people are already doing agile? Some form of agile. So you're doing Scrum, XP, FDD. Okay, a few. The rest of you don't know what you're missing. It's an experience. And the people who are doing it already will have scars to prove it. Because agile really is a life-changing experience for people working on those teams. It leaves scars. Okay, see, I'm telling the truth. So, the session objective. You're a very varied audience. So we can go really deep on TFS, and I could spend 3 hours talking about TFS. TFS is not the end product of the discussion. Okay, yes, it's a Microsoft product, but I want to talk more about the whole process of agile development and how TFS and Visual Studio support agile development. Okay, so we'll spend a little bit of time talking about an agile methodology. We will focus specifically on Scrum. It doesn't mean you cannot use anything else. It's not like saying Scrum is the best. It's just pretty popular. And we'll talk about a little bit of version control if we get chance. That's kind of like the cherry on the cake. So if anybody remembers the Agile Manifesto, there were a bunch of guys almost 10 years ago, as far as I know now, it's almost their birthday. They met up and they decided to draw up what they call the Agile Manifesto. And if anybody's been in development of software over 10 years, like me, you'll remember SSADM, you'll remember waterfall method, you remember doing a lot of analysis, you know, you spend a few months analyzing the solution and drawing up the requirements, and then you vanish for 6 months. And then you come back and you deliver the software, and the business goes, what on earth is that? That wasn't what I wanted. And there's a fundamental issue here. IT thinks they know what the business wants. The business thinks they know what they want, and we don't match. And the only way to bridge this gap is to communicate. So Agile fosters you to do things you wouldn't normally do as a development team. And when I say not normally do, developers are excellent at getting the mushroom treatment. You put them in a dark room, you give them a requirement, they type it, out comes the product. You know, they can work individually very, very well. But they have to work on a team. So Agile values individuals and interactions over the process and the tools. So it's important that the team and the individuals get to know one another. They need to interact with one another. So it's going to force collaboration in the team and with the customer. So that's the first tenet of Agile software development. The second part is, let's get something working over let's write lots of documentation. And I've worked with government agencies where the first thing you do on a new software project is produce a document this big. This is the requirements document. And then you start building it, and hopefully what you built actually matches what you specced out. And the documentation, who reads that anyway? Nobody reads it. And the business doesn't see value in that document. They see value in the end product. So you need to build something which works. So you need to deliver business value early and quickly. And this is pushed to the forefront. It doesn't mean you don't document. One of the tasks of Agile could be to write a document, be it small or big. Customer collaboration over contract negotiation. This is very difficult. The customer wants something, you think they don't want something, and then you start negotiating and say, listen, that's not in the specs, we're not delivering it. And the customer says, but you need it for it to work. And you say, it's not in the specs, so you're very hard-headed and you don't deliver what the customer needed because you're negotiating the contract, not what the customer wants. Now, this is quite scary for people on traditional development because, you know, you heard that thing called scope creep, where the scope creeps and changes. Well, this is going to happen in Agile, but you're going to embrace that to your advantage. You're not going to let it run away with you. So yes, you want to communicate with the customer as often as possible. And you need to respond to change over planning. And this is where everybody says, oh great, I don't need to plan anymore. Agile teams actually plan a lot more than non-agile teams. It's quite interesting. So you need to be able to take those changes and incorporate them in order to deliver better software. So agile embraces iterations. It's an iterative way of developing software. Incremental, deliverable, business valuable pieces of the product are delivered as you go through the process. And the reason why you do that is because you deliver and you refine. You deliver something and then you realize the next time around, hey, this is something I could have done better. And you're learning as you're going along, and you just get better and better as you start delivering stuff, rather than waiting till the end and then realizing, oops, we could have done this a lot better. So you embrace this continuous planning, continuous testing, continuous integration. You need to automate these processes. You need to have some form of tool which the developer can use but doesn't feel it gets in his way. Developers hate tools apart from Visual Studio because that's where they work. So if you can put that tool inside Visual Studio, not on a SharePoint portal server with an Excel spreadsheet which they have to go and look at, then you're on a winning process. So it's got to be lightweight, and it's got to be light on documentation. So we will talk specifically about Scrum, and we'll talk about the different stages of developing in a Scrum framework. We typically start off with the product backlog. So we meet with the customer, and the product owner starts to spec out what the actual product is going to involve. The features of the product make it onto the product backlog with the product owner's basic management. So we build up this list of what we would like to see in this product that the customer wants. And we'll move later on into creating iterations of that software to deliver it incrementally to the end customer. So let's not run before we can actually walk. So yes, we need a list of requirements. That's being a little bit cheeky. You do have a list of requirements, don't you? We put what are called product backlog items into our product backlog. And then we need to prioritize what needs to be worked on first. There could be sequential prioritization, in other words, dependencies. There could be things which we should be delivering before others because that's what the business sees valuable. And we could do this based on ROI, we could do this based on effort. We'll see later on how we actually prioritize the product backlog. Bugs get into the product backlog. I know, we're just starting, and I'm already talking about bugs. We're in our first iteration. Hopefully you don't have any bugs already. But yes, bugs are real work. You have to work on them. And then what happens is the PBIs go through a process. They're first new, which means they're on the PBI, but then they have to be approved. And once they're approved, then they will go into a committed state, and maybe they might go back to approved because they don't get finished, or hopefully they get done and delivered. And this is the trick with Agile, defining what the word done means. And I always use the same example. I mean, for me, done, if I'm, you know, cleaning up the house, done means I've, you know, pulled the bedspread over the bed and everything's tidy. For my wife, done means that my slippers need to be next to the bed and my pajamas need to be under the pillow, and that's done. Two different definitions of the word done make life very, very difficult. But we need to learn that. As a team, we need to learn what is done. Done for the product owner and done for the team are two different things. That's going to be a disaster. So we build up our product backlog and we start to prioritize. So here we can actually see that, you know, there are different work items or product backlog items, some with an effort of 3, some with an effort of 8, some with an effort of 5. We've sized up the features and we basically reprioritize based on some of the analysis we do. So again, we may work on the ROI, we may work on the business benefit, the criticality of it, or the sequence that we need to deliver. And it's at this point that we define done. We create the PBI and we say, okay, I can search for, the report must have the following information. It must adhere to a particular format, so that the product owner can give the team a clear idea of what he will accept as a done and finished product. Now, typically, people's product backlog items without any structured tool in place would look like a lot of sticky notes. This may be great if you're working in a single office if they're stuck to your monitor screen, that's getting a bit dangerous, but you know, you might actually have them up on a board. And it's great because sticky notes can fall off. And I heard a story yesterday where somebody said, you know, the cleaner came in and found the sticky notes on the floor because they had actually finished them and put them back up on the board. And all of a sudden the team were like, oh my goodness, you've just messed up our whole product delivery. So you need to structure this information. And TFS, I'm showing Visual Studio, allows you to integrate that into the actual Visual Studio environment. Now, previous to Scrum, or previous to TFS 2010, the template was very generic for Agile. And Agile teams like the terminology. So it has to be called a PBI. It shouldn't be called a work item. So what Microsoft did is we created templates, and the PBI, at the end of the day, is a work item. Whether it's a user story or a PBI, it's a work item inside TFS. It has a title. It has a description. It has a state. Now, okay, I'm using active, resolve, and closed, but for Scrum, this would be new, approved, committed, and done. TFS is based on SQL Server, so you can change this. There's what's called the Process Template Explorer, allows you to build your own process or borrow other people's processes and use those. The good thing about the work item is that, if you look back here, they have to go through stages. So you cannot go from proposed to closed. I'd like to see somebody manage that. Usually it has to become active, then it has to be resolved, and then it has to be closed. You go through sequences of stages. You can put attachments with those work items. So that XML schema, that UML diagram, those error messages, you can add those into the PBI or into the work item. It's in the repository all in one place. You can assign tasks to people. So you can give people work. That's what you pay them for. And then hopefully then you can run reports to see who's got the most work and you know who needs a bit of a break in order to basically perform better. You can link work items as well. So you can create this sequence of events. In order to deliver this, I need to do this first. You can create a sequence. It's fully audited, and this is where people start to get a bit nervous, because then my manager can tell how long I've been working on a product backlog item, and I keep telling him it's finished, and it's not finished, and I keep working on it, and there's more hours being invested in it. But it is fully customizable. Okay, so this is a great use. How many people are using TFS already? Team Foundation Server. Okay, not many. How many people are using some form of version control? SVN, okay. How many not using version control? Nobody's going to put their hands up to that one. Okay. So work items are the unit of work and communication in the team. A product backlog item would typically look like this, as you can see over here. Let's see if I can do this in PowerPoint. Zoom in a little bit. Okay, I've got my work item, I've got my priority, I've got my title assigned to. It's inside Visual Studio. This is great because the developer is going to see it every time he's working on that project. He's got this little tab here called Team Explorer, which brings it into the IDE for him. And we'll have a look at this now in real life because I'm going to show you Visual Studio. This is what the PBI looks like. In fact, if we have a look at this example I'm giving you here, this is the acceptance criteria. I can find the catalog from the homepage. I can click through the categories, blah, blah, blah. Description. As a something, I want to something, so I can, for a reason. You record this as the PBI. So you're basically giving the business justification, who needs it, and what it is that you're providing. So it's, you know, it's very well structured, but it's very lightweight. Scrum teams typically capture requirements on a post-it note, and you keep that same mentality over here. This item has been assigned to Sam Guckenheimer. I'd like to see him work on the browse catalog for Microsoft Visual Studio Scrum 1.0. It's interesting. And the reason is it's been approved by the product owner, and that's why he should be working on it. There's a product priority, and there's the amount of effort, 3. And there's a business value. And typically, when we work with PBIs, the initial value for business value would be putting it, sorry, the backlog priority would put it on 1,000. We put it right to the end. And the lower the number, the higher the priority. So we've basically got 1,000 different steps to have different levels of priority within our solution. So this is a very standard marketing slide, but I just wanted to show you how TFS fits together. We can do requirements management, we can do version control, test case management, automated builds, reporting. Wow, I bet you didn't know TFS can do all of that. So you can automate the testing, you can automate your builds, so you can have the builds running every night and it drops it off on a server The UA team pick it up and then they do their testing. This continuous integration and this continuous testing is something which TFS helps to facilitate. Anybody who isn't using TFS, and this will be the last marketing slide, because I know you don't want to see marketing slides, you can actually run TFS now on Windows 7 or Windows Vista. It takes 10 minutes to install. I've seen people actually come up on stage and install TFS in a live presentation. It can be done. You can install it on your own machine. You can install it on a single server, multi-server. There's 64-bit support. How many people developing Java in here? You can't put your hands up, don't worry. Nobody. Okay, I like this crowd already. We do support Eclipse in TFS. So if you didn't want to put your hands up and you are using Eclipse, you can use TFS with Team Explorer everywhere and basically get all of this goodness inside Eclipse as well. So once we've got our PBIs, we start off what's called a scrum. We go into a sprint. But before I go into the sprint, let's just have a look at how this is visualized inside TFS. I think you have to actually see this in order to start it. So I typically, over here, I'm able to connect to TFS. So what this is going to do is it's going to look for a particular server, and then it's going to give me all of the projects I'm working on. Okay, so I'm working on Tailspin Scrum. Okay, and this has been set up ahead of time. It's already set up to follow the Scrum process template. Now, I could, if I wished, go into the console over here and create a new project. So let's create a new collection. Okay, I'm just, it's any old data will do for now. And you'll notice that when I've done this, I don't want to create a collection. I'm in the wrong place. Sorry. I need to go to team projects. I don't need another collection. And what I want to do over here is, why can't I create a new? Oh, from Visual Studio. You're right. So I started off showing you how to create a new collection over here. Okay, and create a new project. Okay. So my first scrum. I owe you a beer, whoever said that. So remind me. So these are my process templates. Don't know how well you can see this. There's Agile, CMMI, and there's Scrum. Now, Scrum isn't there out of the box. You have to click on this button over here. Okay, and let's see if I get this right. Usually I get it right, yeah. Click on that, and that will allow you to go and download the template. You run the MSI, but it doesn't actually end up showing. It's weird. What you have to do is you have to go to this tool I was just showing you, and then in the process template, over here, in the process template explorer, inside team. Okay, let's finish this one off first. I go next, I create a new SharePoint. So oh, yeah, I did. I chose Agile. Thanks. I owe you a beer as well now. I'm going to owe a lot of beers by the end of this. So, because SharePoint is integrated, it's going to create for me a SharePoint site, but I don't need to have SharePoint. SharePoint just gives you that nice goodness of all the reporting, and managers love it, and it's a great place to collaborate. I'm not going to actually create this because it takes a while, and like they say on television, here's one I prepared earlier. If you have a look at Team, and you go to Project Settings, you go to Project Collections, Process Template Manager, you just say Upload. And there you point it to the directory and you import the template. That will get you Scrum set up on your machines. So, okay, I'm inside Visual Studio. I haven't opened up a project yet. I've got over here my work items, and I've got my team queries, and here's my product backlog. So I've got this list of items which I'm building for my next iteration of software. There's the product backlog priority, and there's the effort. If two things have the same priority, so let's make this one, instead of making this 900, let's make this 800 and save. What will happen is, once this is ready, you'll notice, if I refresh this, the 800 goes before the 60 because it requires the least effort. I try to deliver what I can deliver fastest first. So I put that automatically to the top. I can create new work items. So I can actually be inside this particular one, and I can create a new bug, an impediment, a product backlog item, or a new sprint. This is Scrum terminology. It's been customized because of the template. So let's create a new product backlog item. Create about screen, for example. Okay? As a, I don't know, as a user, I want an about screen. I'm being a bit silly here, okay? So that I can call for help when it crashes, okay? And here's the acceptance criteria. Must have tell number and email, for example. Okay? My team's going to really kill me with this requirement. They could just give me a form with just the phone number and the email. That's what I've said is going to define done. And I can assign it to somebody. So these are TFS users. That's my product backlog priority. This is the amount of effort. And this is the business value, one. There's not much business value for the about screen. Okay, that's great, but it's much nicer to work in Excel. So we can work in Excel against the PBIs, and we can have this two-way synchronization between Excel and my PBIs, which the team are working on. You know, it's much faster to track the requirements in this tool over here. Because basically what I can do is I can do exactly the same thing. Oh, look, there's that spelling mistake, build UI. Nobody told me I made a mistake there. Okay, let's fix that one. Let's assign that to Abu. He doesn't have enough work. We'll give him some more. And the effort, no, that's going to take less effort. That's only 4. Okay, and then I go to the next one, and then I say, okay, another product backlog item. This is real high priority, 1. The title is login screen. I don't know how many times I've done this, and that's the next one. And when I'm ready, all I have to do is go back to the team and just say publish. Now my team, on the other hand, is sitting inside Visual Studio. They hit refresh, and my build about is over there, and my login screen is there. So I can quickly put the requirements in Excel and send them to the team. Okay? I could even pick up one of these and email it to them. This is really nice. Okay, so I could actually send them an Outlook work item. Please work on this item. Okay. So that's how I build up my PBIs. Okay. And of course, I can have a look. I can build my own queries to pull just my PBIs. In fact, if I log in as Abu, this is his dashboard. So when he logs into the team site, he gets a list of everything that he needs to do. So all of these items are assigned to him. All of those tasks, all of the bugs, all of the latest check-ins he's been doing, everything is actually showing. How many does he have in progress? Now, you know, Abu's biting off more than he can chew. He's got 3 items in progress. He should start things and finish things. He shouldn't be, you know, starting too many things all at the same time. This is showing me, you know, a little bit of a worrying trend in this particular individual. Okay, so we start a sprint. And when we start a sprint, we need to time box. We say, okay, what can the team deliver? And you say, I don't know how much they can deliver. You decide to actually assign those work items, those story points. Or perhaps you call them t-shirts. You have to give each item an amount of effort required to deliver it. And you decide that within one iteration, you may deliver 240 story points, for example. Now you may say, how do I know what they can deliver? How do I know what a story point is? It's not meant to be exact. The first time you might get it wrong. But once you've done the first time, you have a chance to discuss and say, you know, I told you it was 5, and the other guy says, I told you it was 1. And then you have your little bit of a discussion, and you learn as you go along. So the idea is, you know, get going and then learn. My demo's a little bit out of sync. I gave you the demo a little bit earlier. So what happens is when you build a sprint, you need to give a deliverable item. This iteration must have something you can ship, a potentially shippable increment of the software. So you pull off the product backlog what you think you can deliver. Now before you do that, the team meets and decides, hey, that login screen, I said it was 7, you said it was 3. You play what's called planning poker. You have these cards. And you know, if you're a junior developer and the senior one says, I think the login screen will take 1, and the junior developer thinks, yeah, okay, I think it takes 1. What happens is he doesn't say that. You both decide with the cards, and then you bring the cards out. If you both say 1, then that's good, you agree. But if somebody says 7 and somebody says 1, then that means we don't even know what the requirement is, or we're not understanding how much effort it takes. and we negotiate, and then we come up with a value we agree on. So we may get it wrong the first time, and then we've changed one to five. I, as a product owner, thought it was one, the team think it's a five, they discussed with me why they think it's five, because of the dependencies, and I said, okay, it's five. So after planning poker's finished, we pull off some product backlog items, and then we break them down. We break these user stories down into tasks. What do I need in order to build the stock card, for example? And I might need to build add, edit, delete functionality, you know, referential integrity checking, whatever. And then I break down the next user story. And then I break down the last one, and suddenly I have more than 240 story points. I don't say as a heroic IT team, yeah, we can deliver that. We say, no, that story, that user story is too big. We kick it back out. Sometimes these user stories are not stories at all. They're called epics or novels. They're just too big. And we don't know enough about them. So we push them back onto the product backlog. And generally when people say, well, I don't know, maybe, usually they don't know enough. And then they start to inflate the estimates. We push that off and we bring back another item which will fit into our deliverable time frame. This will fit into our 240 story points. And then we say, okay, we commit. The team says we're going to deliver that. And that's when the sprint actually starts. So now I'm back in Visual Studio. I'm going to go back into Visual Studio. And I'm going to take that item, the new login screen, and I'm going to approve it, save it. Okay, so that's actually approved. You notice now it can go to committed or it can go to removed. It's actually tracking a workflow of this particular item. Okay. And we should then find that on our sprint, if we go into our current sprint, we've got a sprint backlog over here. These are all of the items which have moved into my sprint. Now, how did they get into the sprint? Well, typically, I get my PBI, and what I can do is, from here, I can go back into Excel. Do I have Excel open? Yes. There's an item on the very end, which I didn't spend too much time on, the iteration path. So over here, I can say, hey, let's put this into release one. Or sprint one, or sprint two, or sprint three. So I can actually push these into particular sprints. And they will end up then in a sprint that I'm currently working on. They'll end up in my sprint backlog. There's my login screen. Okay, so this is what the team is committed to working on. I shouldn't really, you know, push new stuff. I'm going to approve that. And now everything is approved, and this is the work I have to do. You notice this linking of items. Okay, I've actually got a hierarchy that the authentication system has subtasks. Can you see there's these subtasks tied to this end deliverable? So we can link the items one to the other in order to create those tasks. Okay, so that's all working very, very nicely so far. Everybody with me so far? Okay. It's a lot to absorb, but you know the process is light. So far, we've got PBIs, we've got sprints, and we don't have any bugs, because we don't write bugs. Who writes software without bugs in here? I said that in a previous country I was visiting. One person put his hand up. I had to give him a prize. It was just, you know, too great that he wrote software without bugs. So we start the sprint. And when we start the sprint, typically we have something called the burn down. So those story points start getting burnt down. In other words, these are the number of points we agreed to deliver on, and basically, this is the amount of work remaining. So at this point, once we've started delivering, the project manager can have a look at the rate which we're burning down, and he can actually see, given our current rate, the trend of where we're going to finish. And you notice over here, we're actually ahead of the trend. We actually have a lot less work than the trend is predicting. So the team is really doing, you know, good work at this point. It's delivering on the story points that it's committed. And then at this point, it goes a little bit over, but then it gets to the end, and you notice there's nothing left. We actually delivered all of the story points which we had committed to, and all of the PBIs are in there. All of the functionality is delivered. If you look at some of the reports which TFS generates, again, this is the same report with a little bit more detail. This is the ideal trend. We can see that we're going to finish by just after the 3rd of June at the rate we're going. We're a little bit behind. And if you have a look at the work in progress, there's very little work in progress. It's nice and skinny, which means people are not starting up too many work items at a particular time. Start what you finish, and that's what's important when you're actually going through a sprint and through a burn down. So these reports are extremely valuable when it comes to working inside TFS. And a lot of these reports, you don't get them from here, you can actually get them from within the dashboards which are available. So there is a report over here, and I just need to log in as administrator. I forget my own password sometimes. And hopefully this will actually bring up a list of reports. Whilst we're waiting for the reports, okay, so there's the release burn down, and then there's the velocity. So this actually indicates how quickly the team is completing work. Now this is actually SSRS, and the error I've got, it does make sense, there's no cube. So unfortunately when I started my VM, my data warehouse isn't actually pulling the data from TFS and the cube isn't prepared. But if I had prepared the cube, my data would be in here and I'd actually be able to see what that same report is that I've just showed you. So that would be where I would access the burn down report. Okay. I mean, you can get similar information from within here. If you look over here, we've got reports, and then we've got release burn down, and we've got velocity, we've got build summaries and tests. So let's have a look if we can get the release burn down from in here. We'll probably end up with the same problem, because if the data isn't there, then it's not actually gonna work. But this is great because it's inside the tool or it's outside the tool. Different types of users can access the information at the same time. Everything is controlled with security. I'm actually logged in as administrator, but the user is Abu, so I'm having to re-authenticate every time because of that mistake. It's a complex password. There you go. And exactly, I got the same error, so sorry for taking the time just to give you exactly the same result. So we create a potentially shippable increment of the product, and when we finish that increment, I'm really doing a kind of super compacted talk on Scrum here. When we finish it, we must do a product, a sprint review. And this is kind of where the business is invited, and we present to the business what we developed. And here, the product owner will say, yes, this is done, we delivered it. This is done, we delivered it. And everybody signs off, and that's the review. It's important to record what we delivered, and that everybody agreed that we delivered what was required. Because in the next iteration, that might become important evidence because of a discussion about some regression error which happened. Because we're continuously refactoring the code, maybe we introduce a bug. So we do that presentation and we ship an increment into the business. And this is where we now need to make sure we've got versioning controls, we're doing builds, we're doing automated testing. Here, it's very, very important that we can do regression tests on what it is we've shipped, and we can track what we've shipped. And of course, TFS does that. The sprint process isn't really concerned with this, but the tool of TFS can actually control that environment as well. Now, internally, the team does a post-mortem. They do what's called a retrospect. And here, the team decides, what did we do well? What did we do bad? What can we do better? Carl underestimates, this guy overestimates. It's very personal. Unfortunately, you have to be a team committed to being honest and open. I was talking with Ivan about working on Scrum processes, and it's a culture change to the people on the team, especially if you're a kind of introspective person and you don't really like to share. But it's important that your qualities are shown, because it helps you deliver more accurate estimates of how long it will take you to deliver the software next time around. So, we write down what worked, we write down what didn't work, what should we change in the future, and we start getting these velocities. So here, my first sprint gave me a velocity of 13. The team was still new, and we weren't doing too bad. Second sprint, we really got to know one another, so we did 15 story points delivered. Sprint 3 was a disaster, we went below the average, something went wrong. So, basically we approved, we did a retrospect, we get a sprint velocity of 18, and there something went right. So hopefully the team needs to know what it is that they did to actually allow them to overachieve. So again, these reports are baked into TFS. They're there, they're readily available. And you can see there, sprint 3, was 22 story points, where our average is 34. So something obviously went wrong in sprint 3 and 4. So, it gives great transparency to the development process without actually incurring too much work. In fact, if you go into TFS, I didn't show you one other thing. Let's just remove this from the screen. Let's find my work items. This is my sprint. This is my sprint. Let's find sprint number one. And this is where I do my my sprint review. So over here, I can actually write, you know, what worked and what didn't. And here's the retrospect. So over here, I'm going to document what worked and what didn't inside the actual sprint item itself, sprint item number 107. And if we have a look at the actual tasks, if I'm not mistaken, here's one. Here we've got remaining work. So as soon as I change that, imagine I'm Abu and I'm working on this, I say 6, and then I say save. You notice it's auditing everything. Okay, so it says, okay, Abu said it was 10 and now it's 6. And as soon as I say that the state, instead of being to do, it goes into in progress, I can then start running reports, which gives me all of the in progress work items by person. So I can actually check who's working on what, and I can see how much work is in one person's plate. I can do capacity planning. There is an Excel spreadsheet which allows you to kind of say, listen, Abu has a capacity of 40 story points, or 40 hours of work a week, for example. And then I can actually see if I've overcommitted to him on particular items. It's great because when I say I'm done, the work remaining goes to 0. But if I decide to switch that back to in progress, I can't actually save it until I've put in the amount of work that's left. So there's a certain amount of process control happening just to make sure that nobody gets it wrong. Now, I did mention the version control. Maybe some people are using SourceSafe. Maybe some people are using TFS just for version control. It's great because, you know, now we can actually implement policy in TFS. And when I say we implement policy, we can actually tie that when somebody checks something in, it must build. It must not break the team's build. I can do what's called gated check-in. I can also implement a policy that when somebody checks something in, it has to be tied to a product backlog item. That kind of stops the user getting a phone call from, you know, Jane or John in the business. Can you fix this? Yeah, I'll fix it. And then he fixes it, and then he tries to check the code, and he's like, oh, which work item am I going to put it against? Maybe I shouldn't have done that work. Maybe it should have gone into the proper process, and a backlog item gets created, and it all gets tracked. So, you know, it's a great support for the developer as well, that there's this process involved to help him. So we can associate work items with versions of code. So let's go and have a look at that, because I think the best way to see anything is to actually have a look at it. So I'm going to open up a recent project, and I think I've got one. That's just a file. My stock management system. It's a real great system. That's my about screen. Okay, I go back to Solution Explorer. This is my splash screen. You'll notice over here the icon is locked. Okay, so I can't, you know, it's actually under version control at this point. And as soon as I make a change, you know, I did a lot of work today. I changed this screen. Wow. Okay, then what I decide to do is I say, let's check it in. And of course I have to save. If you don't save, you can't check it in. As soon as I try to check it in, oops, error. You need to have a code reviewer. So, oh yeah, needs refactoring. Yeah, sure. And then I try and check it in again. It says, hey, you have not met policy requirements. So what it's basically saying is, you need to find a work item, and you're going to say, I was working on the splash screen, there, that one. And I'm associating it. Now, the state is done, because I did this demo and I forgot to reset it. But typically, it wouldn't have been done. It would have been something like this. So just imagine it was like that. Okay, and then when I'm finished, I come in over here and I say, done. So I've done some changes to the code, I've updated the work item, it's removed those number of hours remaining, and it's tied the two together now. That work item has a link to some code which was involved to get that work done. Okay, I shouldn't have the work item open, you know, from two places at the same time. I left it open inside my work manager, which is why it wouldn't let me update the work item. When I did that change twice, I basically confused it. So I think, you know, with a basic overview of what TFS, if you're interested in what that changes that I made, if you go into Project Team Explorer and you go to Project Source Control, here's the check-in policy, and this is what I can add. So I can add builds. I can make sure that every time somebody checks in, it runs a build on my build server. And this is where we can implement gated check-in. Or I can run code analysis. I could be running static code analysis, or I could be running for metrics coverage of tests. How well are my tests performing? Yeah, all the tests are passing. But are they actually covering 50% or more of the code? I could write a test which only tests one branch. I may want to implement that there's a particular metric that the test coverage must be more than 75% for it to be an effective test. So I can actually implement testing policy as well. At the moment, all I've done here is, you know, work items require, anything that you check in must require a work item. So here I'm controlling the check-in process. I'd love to show you the build stuff. I'd love to show you some other stuff, but in the essence of time, Ivan has got a nice continuation to this whole story. If you're using 2008 Visual Studio or TFS, there is support for Agile in there already. So we do have things like team sites. We have build notifications. Automated builds were in there. So you can start doing this automated build process using MS Build. Static analysis, code metrics, they all came in 2008. And of course, maybe you're doing some refactoring. I had that red-green refactor. Maybe you're doing TDD, test-driven development. We do have these tools inbuilt into the box. We did improve in 2010 the TDD experience. So when you write a test, it can actually implement the method stub for you. So you say a class called account.deposit. How do you build a test for depositing money into your account? Well, it should be that the balance equals the old balance plus the amount you deposited. But you haven't written that yet. You've written the test, but you haven't written the code. With TDD inside Visual Studio, it will generate a test stub for you so that there is at least a method called deposit on your account object so that you then have a place to write your code. We talked about gated check-ins. So the controlling of the check-in and the policies. There is parent-child hierarchies, so you can create these nested types of work items. There's a lot of, you know, goodness coming in Visual Studio 2010, the next version, sorry, vNext. I encourage you to read Brian Keller's blog 2 days ago. So just look for a person called B. Keller, or B. Brian Kell, if you look over here. This is where you get all of the latest and greatest. There's some nice stuff coming to TFS next version. You know, things like storyboarding. There's a nice paper you can read. It's only 13 pages long, so it's good bedtime reading. You can watch the whole presentation of what they've done. So, you know, new code review policies being implemented to help you manage the code review cycle as well. So those are just a few references. I'm just going to switch back out of my VM and wrap up the session. If there's anything to take away, the top one is define done. I think that really is key. If you're going to fail, fail fast. It's good to know you've done it wrong early. So find out that you did it wrong early so that you can improve on the next iteration. Understand as a project manager, how fast can your team deliver? Knowing what they're capable of is really important. Bugs are real work. I like that one. They do need work. Don't build up debt, so to speak. You know, don't owe yourself extra work because that item isn't really done. When it's done, it has to be finished, and you have to do those bugs. They do take priority. And I think one of my favorites is plan until you need to learn. So many teams spend so much time planning. Get down and do some work, learn, and then go back and plan again. And you'll be much better the second time round as you plan. And of course, quality is not a variable. Okay, quality must be something you hold true to from the beginning to the end of the process. So I hope you enjoyed 45 minutes of Scrum. Like I said, TFS is a huge product. It is easy to install now. It takes about 15 minutes to install. It takes a lot longer to configure. But you know, there are many books and many people to help you configure Scrum. There are lots of blogs about it. I hope you enjoyed the session, and I hope you look towards TFS for your next project. So if you have any questions, please let me know. Fill out your evals, as I said before, and enjoy the next session from Ivan. Thank you.